You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with your host, Lance White. Tonight, we welcome Eve Lorgan back to the show. Eve is a dedicated counseling professional, UFO alien abduction researcher, and USARA yogi and writer. She began her pioneering work with alien abductees while earning her master's degree in counseling psychology in 1992. She also holds a BS in biochemistry and worked in the biotechnology industry for 7 years. Eve started a support group in 1994 in San Diego County, California, for experiencers of anomalous trauma, and continues to consult with anomalous trauma clients worldwide today while living in Western North Carolina. She was a close associate of the late Barbara Bartholik and is dedicated in continuing and expanding the work of the late Dr. Carla Turner. She has authored The Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. She has also written The Dark Side of Cupid, Love Affairs, the Supernatural, and Energy Vampirism. I first heard of her on a show which it was called Super Woo with George Kavassalis, and was thrilled as George and she shared insights and wisdom. So let's welcome her to the show now. Hi, Eve. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, when I first heard you, I was just, there were so many ahas that I thought, I just have to talk to this person.
That's good. It must have been George's show. The Super Woo one. That was a pretty detailed show, and it was kind of nice to be able to go into detail about levels of deception and different things that some people don't really go into. So, that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've had him on the show quite a few times, and I love his work, and there's quite a lot of alien interference going on, and I think one of the things that comes up is that people don't realize the extent of it, and then it's so interwoven into our experiences and so concealed that it's difficult to flesh out. You've managed to flesh out quite a bit of it.
Yeah,
and continue to do that. We could start by, the focus that you have and what your experiences have been.
Okay. I guess I could just start off as, I guess because I got a degree in counseling psychology with emphasis on actually relationships and interpersonal dynamics, I really like to pay attention to relationship dynamics and what happens between people and around people who've had anomalous encounters with aliens and paranormal activity and like the classic alien abduction experience, as well as the MILAB experience. So what I noticed right off the bat was that, there were being manipulations in relationships with the abductees, and it happened in many different ways. Oftentimes it happened in a way that appeared to have the intention of disrupting them in their healing and awareness process when, let's say, coming to support group and sharing for the first time, or learning about others' experiences that could shed light on their own. So there was a disruption process that was taking place, and it was a consistent pattern I saw repeated over and over again. It wasn't just a coincidence. I mean, it got beyond coincidence pretty soon. But apparently the aliens or who's ever working in their case will interfere in different ways. And the first book I wrote focused more on how they orchestrate and put people together in love connections or sometimes friendships. And they will do this sometimes when you're already like married to or have another partner, it didn't seem to make a difference. So that was the first book, basically, to establish that there were many cases that reported they felt their relationships, their love connections were engineered or disrupted in some way. And it, you know, had a pattern of love obsession, which is something that Barbara Bartholik, my mentor, who really helped me understand and be able to look for when observing, you know, these dynamics going on. When the aliens would put people together, it carried out this whole drama of, you know, love obsession a lot of the times, and paranormal activity, synchronicities, omens, precognitive meetings of the person, you know, mutually shared dreams, the whole nine yards. And then the switching off of the other partner, leaving one unrequited and pining away, and like these emotional ups and downs, like they're being played, you know, like a yo-yo. So This was something that Barbara knew a lot about, and she called it, she didn't call it the love bite per se. That's something that we kind of coined the term from other abductees, you know, and she just called it the drama of the love obsession, because it carried out a certain signature that, in her view, was what the aliens were after, were harvesting the emotions and feeding off that emotional energy. Mm. So that kind of got me started to start looking for different things within the alien abduction experience itself, and the interpersonal dynamics even in those people's lives and their background histories. So I really come to believe now that there's definitely a spiritual component, and that they're interfering on many different levels of reality, not just a physical abduction level, obviously, you know.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we've all been made aware of the breeding programs that the Greys are running with millions of hybrids, supposedly.
Well, they definitely have done that also, and that seems to be a large part of, you know, why they're taken, you know, to take, you know, sperm samples or to take eggs or put them together with others, and they may give them screen memories of having sex with, like, their favorite movie star or whatever, and then really it's like somebody else. And and then, you know, taking the baby, and when they're pregnant, taking the fetus, and God knows what they do with it and where it goes, and if they grow
right
up to adulthood and that kind of thing. And in the love bite, I mean, that was one of the reasons why they may put some people together, was so that they do have children together. But that really didn't appear to be the primary purpose. But then again, you know, the aliens can do this with people without you even having to, quote, be married to them. And they could just pluck you from one side of the country and pluck somebody else from another part of the world and put you together and, you know, create what they want, since they have the technology to do that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that was certainly an eye-opener, because I learned a lot about MILABS doing the first book and having a support group with my colleague James Bartley, who does a lot of research with MILABS and, you know, reptilians and that involvement. So we got to learn a lot about that involvement, the military involvement with the aliens, or certain abductees had also regular military-type abductions, where they were interrogated or used by them to do certain ops under mind control and alternate reality situations. And it appeared that, you know, the military were either working with the aliens or using their technology or something like that to carry out their own agenda, which was apart from the aliens but appeared to be working with them in some ways. And then
There's definitely a military presence that's going on in most of these cases, isn't there?
Well, I don't know if it would be most of the cases, but certainly in the U.S., well, it seems like they definitely know who these people are. They have been able to track them and know who they are and then follow them throughout life and kind of keep the surveillance tabs on them. So I don't think it's in all cases, because some people just have nothing but alien encounters with no military at all, and then some people have a lot more of the military than the aliens, but they have both. So it's not a either or situation, you know, and both things happen sometimes together. So and I think the military have the the technology and capability to do the same thing with respect to relationship orchestration and engineering and disrupting, definitely. So, who knows, some of this could be black magic as well. In my second book, The Dark Side of Cupid, I do have a couple of cases where one of the partners was using magic to actually do a spell to get the person to fall in love with them, and then the entities acted like reptilians, basically, and had the same signature as, you know, a classic alien love bite. So it calls into question, you know, what kind of entities are being invoked by some people. And there was different, you know, descriptions, which is why the second book I didn't really want to make it all about an alien abduction or ET kind of hypothesis, because what people observed weren't always just ETs. They were other entities that may be described like, let's say, a troll spirit or a snake-like being, or sometimes it wasn't clear. Other times they did see a reptilian or an alien, but it wasn't always clear in all those cases. For the most time, when people come to talk to me, they don't always have a clear recollection of their alien encounters. Most people really don't remember that much. So when they have one of these engineered relationships, they just may get bits and pieces, but the dynamics of the relationship seems to fit the pattern of it being some kind of orchestrated or influenced relationship from paranormal factors. So oftentimes what I call it the third-party entity that's overshadowing the relationship or involved in disrupting or even carrying out a form of psychic vampirism indirectly through a partner who's being overshadowed by a particular entity. So I actually got many more cases of that. Yeah, and it kind of opened up a whole can of worms, you know.
Oh, I can imagine.
In terms of understanding psychic vampirism and, you know, how it's going to play itself out with these interfering entities overshadowing certain people. So it definitely has a signature, and that's why I wrote the book, so that people could identify, you know, is this really a soulmate connection? Because these people, when they have these love connections that feel engineered, they're really very powerful, and the linking, the psychic linking is strong. They may experience a lot of magical qualities, like, you know, they think it's your soulmate. So it, you know, begs the question, these people have such a strong connection and instant chemistry, and they may have deja vus of being with them before or past life memories. But if these unusual other dynamics start playing out, then I would question, you know, where it's really coming from or what's interfering with that relationship. So that actually there were some cases in there where I think true love was actually being disrupted, where there was a good connection with someone, and then there were interfering entities trying to actually break up the couple and then get them with another partner, which would be what I call the cookie-cutter setup, who's like a fake soulmate situation. And then that kind of partner would be sometimes overshadowed or manipulated like a puppet by, quote, the bad ETs or the other malevolent entities that are feeding. So, I mean, I've seen this over the years where, like, the same person will come to me, and then, let's say, 10 years later, they report that they finally met, you know, the person that was a lot like the first love bite, except it's the real one, and that all along they realized that they were being disrupted. So they don't know until years later if they meet, like, the real soulmate kind of person. So there's all kinds of unusual things that happen, but definitely there's disruption and interference, and certainly calls into question why, you know, and that was my big question, why I wrote the book.
Did you find some answers to those questions?
I did. I think more so in the second book, which focuses more on the dynamics of when your relationship is being engineered and influenced by a third-party entity that somehow feeding on the energy or creating disruption or disruption of true love, then you'll be able to identify it and know how to resolve it and work with it and, you know, or heal the situation. And that doesn't necessarily have to do with aliens, but in many cases it did. There were several Milabs who were in the second book. So, and the Milab situation is the one who had undergone more serious trauma in their life, were actually set up with the more severe psychopath partners who were overshadowed by sometimes a lizard type of entity or another type of spirit that was feeding on their energy.
Mm.
So it seemed as though there was a connection there with, if there was a deep trauma that was unhealed, then those people might be more vulnerable to be set up with a psychic vampire kind of partner. Although I've had cases where it's a perfectly healthy person who doesn't have that kind of trauma or history at all, and they're set up, they have a relationship with one of these predator psychic vampire types that are hosted by the non-human entity, and they're absolutely floored because, you know, the connection is super powerful. It's a very hypnotic connection. It's hard to actually release yourself from, you know?
It seems
it's like being
it
under
would
spell.
Be. Mm-hmm.
Say that again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something very hypnotic about it.
You had on your website, which is www.evelorgan.com, I read an interview with a female MyLab, Angelia Cardwell, by James Bartley today, and I highly recommend that people check out your website.
That's a good one.
Because it's a fascinating story, and there's some excellent articles that talk about all of the things that we're talking about now and get into more depth as well.
Yeah, and James knows a lot about, you know, MILABs and reptilians and the occult connection with many of the MILABs, and it's amazing, you know, nowadays you're hearing much more about this, but I can tell you, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you try to come out with this information, you'd be slammed right and left with reprisals and disruptions and agents coming in your life and making life miserable for you. So it's really a blessing that these things could even come out to be heard because they've been going on for a long time.
Yes, probably thousands of years.
Yes, I think so now when I look at it and I see that there is an occult connection, and I think we learned a lot with the MILAB situation because of the occult connections that people have discovered in their family histories, where they might have been, let's say, the Illuminati bloodline person, or they know that they have a hybrid reptilian bloodline, or their parents or relatives were involved in some secret society or military-industrial complex career or high-level military intelligence or whatever. They tend to have a lot more of those elements that where you can make those connections with. Obviously, there's some kinds of non-human higher entities that are working in collusion with these secret societies to carry out these mind control agendas and mind control operations that are very occult and very much mixed in with black magic and alien technology. So it's connected, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there seems to be a great deal of evidence that points to those being the underlying forms of control. The hand behind events that are taking place on the planet. So, the Illuminati and the families that are connected through genetics and the rest of it are, you know, are able to place themselves and their cohorts in positions of power. And of course, this can occur in and outside of time as well. It would have to be able to take place outside of time since it's interdimensional and involves time travel.
Yeah, and that's when it starts to really get confusing where people talk about, you know, being age regressed and these secret projects working on Mars and, you know, or being taken and all you see is a flash of light and then there's no missing time and then come to find out there was an entire abduction that happened within the flash of a moment. But because they're able to basically put you back the second you left, you don't have any time. So it's really confusing because you think this is impossible, this can't happen, but then you get these weird flashback memories sometimes coming a few hours later or in your dreams or the next day, something triggers it and like, wait a minute, how could that have happened? You know, there was no missing time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it makes things really confusing. You start questioning your sanity when those kind of things happen.
Well, it certainly helps to explain how things could be run from outside the matrix, and it helps to understand a little bit the nature of the difficulty that we face in identifying it and in revealing it.
Yeah, or even having some kind of regaining power and control, and certainly that's one of my big intentions in working with people, is not to just, you know, get the memories back that people have of these experiences, but providing support and also helping them liberate themselves from the interference, which is kind of a different tactic. I don't just, you know, pull up memories and do the hypnotic regressions, but really work more with getting them connected with their soul and integrating, you know, their mind, spirit, and soul, and then working on eliminating the, what I call the alien parasites, and maybe what implants could be present and what links, let's say if you're, you know, there's a psychic vampire linking in with you, and try to eliminate those connections and, you know, finding out why they're there and where they came from and where they entered into the reality, and eliminating it. Mm-hmm. So more often than not, I think this goes from lifetime to lifetime. It's not just a single life thing. I mean, I've had people who are in one of these bloodline families, for example, where they remember other lifetimes and having their soul be kind of entrapped to recyclement. Of actually certain souls continually being recycled through certain bloodlines because they made a pact somewhere along the way. So they get continually recycled into the same bloodlines unless they decide to get out of that agreement or whatever that situation is. So there's a recyclement going on, and the mind control helps maintain that amnesia of the enslavement.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that mind control is quite prevalent?
No, very much so. I mean, it's a big part of... big part of the MILAB experience, where there's human military involvement, because a lot of them, depends on where they are in the program, sometimes they're monarch programming, where there's more severe MK-Ultra traumatization and splitting of the personality, and then the programming of alters, and those kind of programs where humans are involved, there's more mind control at that level. But with the aliens, it's much more insidious. They also use mind control, but they may not necessarily use the same strategies. They're more seamless in their ability to influence the thoughts of the person and the behaviors. And I think it's more on a spiritual level of control, or what I call the parasitic level of control, and also with certain types of implants. So it's really, you know, trying to become aware enough to know what kind of mind control system someone might be under, and to recognize the influence and to recognize the energy is like, okay, nope, this feels human and military. Oh, no, this feels alien. And so there's a lot of people who were in these programs. They're very, very psychic. And one of the reasons why they're used is because they're so psychic and they're gifted and they're very intelligent and they're chosen because of their bloodline and their abilities. So a lot of them can use their abilities to take their power back. And so many of them are very sensitive enough to be able to tell once they really get working on their healing and integration and recovery process. And that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important. I mean, the healing and recovery and the integration is very, very important. And that's how you gain your power back. But I think it's an uncomfortable journey with people who've gone through severe trauma, because they don't want to feel the feelings associated with some of these traumas and losses in their lives. And that really lies the courage that someone needs to take to, you know, mend those wounds and heal those wounds, because it's the unhealed wounds which makes them more accessible and manipulatable, which is why they do trauma, you know?
Right, right.
So, I mean, it's the whole modus operandi is to keep people traumatized and worrying about survival and all these disruptive, chaotic, crappy relationships, so they could never get a sense of foundation and recovery and peace to really work in the healing process. And indeed, you know, this is what I found with the MILABs and abductees right off the bat, is that, you know, when they tried to start working on the recovery process, I don't mean just a couple of hypnotic regressions. I mean really healing and recovery, and which takes a dedication over many years to become aware and to purify your life. You clear up your relationships. You know, you do the work. That's when you can get assailed on all sides with a lot of the disruption to try to prevent them from having the stability to continue that process. And so, I mean, one of the reasons I wrote The Love Bite and The Dark Side of Cupid is because I work with people who were absolutely emotionally devastated for years. And I'm talking about emotional devastation that is beyond some people's comprehension and ability to even handle. I mean, it put a lot of people with suicidal ideations, because when you go through one of these love bite things and we're with a psychic vampire, when they're really working on you to prevent you from awakening, you know, it could throw you off for 10, 15, 20 years. That's a long time.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Is there some methodology to how these people are chosen by a psychic vampire, or does it seem to be specific to a type of person, or is it more of a random thing?
I don't think it's random, no. I think there's some people who emit a lot of light, and they have, like, this wonderful, juicy, high-vibe energy, and they're full of joy and full of light, and there's some people who are chosen just for that reason, or they're like super positive and maybe so focused on the positive that they leave themselves open until they have one of these relationships and they realize, you know, shit happens, okay, with like bad psychic vampires. And then there are, I think it happens a lot with within the alien abductee / experiencer community and with NILABs and with people who've been through mind control projects. And the ones who are, let's say, breaking programming, then they will be targeted by some of these predator types. And it does happen. In fact, one of the cases in The Dark Side of Cupid, she came to me because of one of these severe love bites with a person that she believed was a hybrid reptilian who was, like, overshadowed by a dark entity who was feeding on her energy. And then she discovered that she had a greater degree of involvement of let's say, NILAB and ritual abuse that she wasn't even aware of before. But because of the liberation techniques that we used, which is some of Malanga's techniques, to deal with, you know, basically the alien interference, we realized there was much more going on, and that opened up the awareness of a deeper involvement.
Mm.
So sometimes certain people are targeted because they're of a certain bloodline, and those bloodline people, they do not want to let their people go. They are completely controlling of their bloodlines. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to let them go. And if they try to, you know, become free, they just assail them all ends. And they'll do it through their employer, your family, you know, people out on the streets. They'll start doing gang stalking. And it's pretty amazing.
Wow.
But I think healing the wounds and really healing the heart and connecting with the soul is the way to seal up those windows of access that these entities will try to use to enter into your reality. So that's why healing is so important. I mean, that's why, like, one-third of my second book is all about the healing process, from, you know, the lighter levels of communication skills to the heavier levels of paranormal intervention strategies. And that was really just touching upon the healing strategies. So the next place that I really want to go with some colleagues who work with the shadow work is just working on some really good in-depth healing and counseling and recovery strategies for people who are having some of these deeper issues to empower them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because that's needed, it's very needed. You know, I don't want to stay in a place of, oh, we're all so powerless and this manipulation is bad and, you know, we're all going to hell and... No, I don't believe that. I believe that we do have power, and we are not powerless. We just need to discover where our power is and how to connect with it. And
right.
Sometimes that means letting go of limiting belief systems that we've been ingrained to believe all our lives about religion, about whatever.
Now, how can a person begin to find out if they are experiencing something of this nature? What are some of the clues
Well, I mean, it depends. Some people who have UFO sightings, multiple UFO sightings, and then they start having unusual paranormal experiences in their life, or an unusual relationship on the tail end of, let's say, a UFO wave where they were involved with a lot of sightings, and then they met somebody and under unusual circumstances, and then it's playing out in this really strange psychic vampire drama. that would be, you know, a red flag that something's happening. But more often than not, it happens to people who've had multiple alien encounters throughout their life. I mean, that's how I stumbled across it with the love bite, the alien love bite. But it doesn't just happen to experiencers. It can happen just to anybody. And it's just becoming aware of what it is. And really, in the dark side of Cupid, it's almost like a clairvoyant view of relationship manipulation, basically. Because that's really what's happening. It's happening on all these different levels of reality. Sure sounds paranoid, though.
Now, what would you said that sometimes there might be a primary partner and then a third partner comes in. How does that work?
Well, you know, there were several cases in the love bite where, let's say, it's a married couple and the person's in their 30s and they got young kids, and then they have these dreams of somebody that they're, you know, made love to in a dream, but it seemed more real. And then they maybe get their image in their mind, and then they just have this compulsion to want to find this person. They know they're real, and then maybe within months or maybe a couple of years later, then they meet the person, and then they'll have these astounding synchronicities when they meet them. And then maybe when they do, there's instant chemistry. There's a mutual connection more often than not. Sometimes the other person will actually remember the dream, and they'll have mutually shared dreams, which, of course, leads the question, was it really a dream? Or did they really have a mutual abduction scenario or some kind of, virtual reality scenario that was implanted at the same time? And it certainly leads to question, you know, how they do this. I mean, in some of the cases in the love bite, these people were bonded as children several times throughout their lives, and then they met later as an adult after they were already married to somebody else, mind you. And so when they met the other person, it's like major chemistry and love obsession. At least for one partner. So basically they could bond you early in life and, you know, pre-imprint you with this other person, and then you meet them later and, you know, all the fireworks and all that. But then it's a lot of emotional, upheaval, because they may be married to other partners and they want to be loyal and they don't want to break up their families. And so, that kind of stuff goes on unless they realize it's happening, and then they both have to really assess, is this worth it? You know, is this going to last forever? Maybe there's a way to stop this whole thing. And sometimes the aliens will, like, take one person, and then they'll basically switch them off, and then they no longer have feelings for the other person. It's like overnight, just switched off. So that's really sad, because it could leave the other person pining away where they felt this powerful connection, and they're not unhinged, but they still feel these feelings, you know? So those kind of things happened. There wasn't any hybrid baby involved, so, you know, it leads you to wonder, it's more than just testing emotions, for heaven's sake. I mean, how many times do you have to test with humans to figure them out? I mean, for me, it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. You know what I mean? This is a harvesting operation.
Right, exactly. And emotions are harvestable.
Yeah.
So, religions are used to harvest emotions from the masses. So all of that energy that comes up goes through the top of the, religion, and it's culled by those who are feeding off of that emotion of worship. So, you can imagine the sensations of feeling that worship coming to you by milking humanity through religions and through also through negative events.
And I think they can do it through positive as well as negative emotions.
Yeah.
And depending on the entities, I mean, some people believe that, you know, demons and angels and all these entities, they're similar in that they want some kind of attention and energy from us and may feed in different ways. Maybe the higher ones who are, you know, don't want negative energy, but they still want the worship and the attention. And they want to be seen as gods, which is really, you know, egotistical when you think about it. That was actually something that George kind of went into detail about in his show with me, Super Woo, where he talked about the different levels of beings at the higher levels of reality and the deeper levels of deception, with these different gods and ETs and Galactic Federation of Light, and, you know, how basically they have a lot of ego. A lot of them, you know, they want to be worshipped.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So, I mean, there's not just little aliens down here. I think there is a hierarchy of many different kinds of beings. There's certainly many different masks, and that's actually something that intrigued me about Dr. Corrado Malanga's work out of Italy. He's an alien abduction researcher and a scientist also. He's worked for 20-plus years with abductees and basically figured out a hierarchy of aliens and then the higher levels of creation. So what he discovered is that there's like at least six levels of alien interference, getting, you know, deeper and deeper and more invasive, where, you know, the first level is physical abduction, second level is maybe the gynecological things and the cloning, and then the alien parasitism is another level, transferring consciousness into cloned bodies or alien bodies. And then there's the interaction with the higher level beings, like the primordial man, for example. And this one is supposedly a being who's like the mythological or archetypal Adam Kadmon.
Mm-hmm.
And it will appear like a grandfather or father god figure that is all powerful, almost like the one in the Old Testament.
And
that one will keep us coming back lifetime after lifetime to him. So it's kind of like being recycled through him over and over again. But then there's levels even higher than that. And then I guess the ultimate goal is to become free from the dominion of all these different levels of gods until we reconnect with our divine nature, which is the pure non-duality of the all that is, which we have in our own nature. We don't really need all these other gods to connect to. So that's his theory anyway, but it's part of the liberation process to get away from external deity, because that's where we run into trouble. Sometimes we don't know, are these really, you know, good deities? Are they just feeding on us, you know, feeding on us or deceiving us or keeping us coming back and entrapped over and over again? And so, you know, it leads to the question of karma and reincarnation, and why are we really being recycled, and is this a con game? I mean, it certainly makes you want to ask that question.
Absolutely. A lot of people feel that the incarnational process has been waylaid and that there are all kinds of back doors and the secret contracts that can be written as a person incarnates. So and what you said as well, that you have all these different entities that are playing their own games, that have their own groups of entities that are incarnating over and over. So yes, this could be quite a place for trying to escape. It apparently is very difficult to escape from the wheel of life and death, according to the Hindu religions.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that, and I've found solace with some of the higher Buddhist teachings in terms of how to liberate oneself from that, and using certain techniques like dream yoga and certain meditation techniques that have to do with, I guess, really releasing a lot of beliefs and illusions, just so that you rest into that nature and that realization to get beyond a lot of the illusions. But that's not an easy process. I mean, people have been trying to meditate for years in caves to get to that place. But one of the things that Malanga came up with that I thought was interesting was the discovery of what he calls an active alien memory, which is a type of alien parasite that could embed itself within our brain/mind, and then it has its own memories stored in our mind-body or mind-brain, and that it can have several lifetimes of each of its host's memories in it as well. So that one could have the memory of the alien and all the alien's memories, as well as its hosts, that it's used from one host to the next, because that's how they carry out extend their life. So they have to use humans as hosts to extend their memories, because I guess the theory is, according to what Malanga had discovered, was that the aliens who have, it's like an implant of all their memories, and then it contains a mind and a spirit component, or sometimes just a mind component. Whereas humans, we as humans who have souls, we have a mind, a spirit, and a soul. And they need our soul to feed off of, because that's what gives them the energy and the power to maintain their memory and life. So if they don't have us to carry them, they have no life. They will just die. So they need human hosts to go from one body to the next. So in other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you have memories of being an alien, that may not be your past life. It may be the alien implant or the active alien memory parasite that they put inside you. And so, you know, it leads to the question, what kind of memories am I really having, you know? And to question sometimes, you know, what's really happening. Of course, it's confusing.
I think that I'm not sure if it was Malanga that said that we could technically be cloned, that, you know, part of our, some of our DNA and genetic material could be cloned, and then an implant or memory could be created in the clone. So we could have as many as, we could have hundreds, I suppose, of concurrent or, quote, parallel, unquote, lives that were not real, that were just merely being used to harvest the energy by these mind parasites.
Well, they use the body, or they make the copy in order to make a copy of the active alien memory, because that's what they really want to retain. So Malanga says it may not be an exact cloning process, but more of a copying process, which I don't know if that's the same. But from what I've heard with some of the super soldiers, they say that the clones, they don't last that long, that when they make them up in adult, I mean, they don't last that long. And so they can be downloaded with the same memories and appear to have the same memories, but I've heard that they don't last that long.
I've also heard that some of the super soldiers they've had difficulty with, because they've been breeding them for violence, and they have a difficulty at a certain point with the super soldiers because they have become so violent they are not controllable. They break out.
Wow. You mean the clones or the super soldiers?
The super soldiers.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're bred to be violent and to take life. I mean, you know, or they're actually created to have no feelings so that they could execute the job more precisely and without remorse and, you know, with security. So that's,
right.
Yeah.
And, of course, that ties into the idea that the people at the top are psychopaths.
Oh, yeah.
And don't have empathy.
I think they're controlled by what they call the archontic parasite mind or the alien mind. And it could be different. It could take different forms depending on, let's say, who can clairvoyantly perceive it. And I've known people who, I work with a lot of psychics anyway, but there's certain ways to perceive that when someone's taken over.
Uh-huh.
That not only do they act like psychopaths, but they may have a paranormal twist on top of it. They may be black magicians as well, so they have all these paranormal abilities. Sometimes their eyes will turn black.
I've seen that.
You know, make the shifty change with the slit eye, or sometimes
you
can perceive their aura being different, or they have this huge overshadowing over their aura. You might see the claws, you might see the tail, you just might see the big, just a big shadow over them. And they could even disguise their auras in some cases, where they're that good at disguising themselves to make themselves look like they have, like an indigo aura, but really, it's not who they are.
Well, yeah, one of the things that George talked about that was so spooky, that there is a false light paradigm, and that many of these darker beings and reptilians have been breeding beings of light, have been developing, taking the genetics and breeding the highest characteristics of the paranormal. So a being of light can appear to you with golden hair and radiant aura, but they can be the darkest of the dark.
Yes. I know, and that's actually what Malanga found in many of his cases where there's, I guess there's many different alien types, like the alien greys, you know, the mantids, reptilians, the certain type of Nordic type, the oranges, the six-fingered blondes. There's a whole list of different kinds of alien forms. And then there's what he calls the incorporeal aliens, which may take on a form in another dimensional reality, but they're not necessarily physical. And then one of those incorporeal entities that is a consistent find in these alien parasites is what they call the Lux being, and it's all light, actually, and it's like a big ball of light or a fuzzy ball of light that can, like, move around in the body, or and it can, like, run and hide and stuff. And Malanga believes now that this is a type of emanation of Lucifer, basically.
Oh,
there's
wow.
a whole bunch of these little balls of light, and then they can act like spirit guides, and they'll try to hide when you're working with people, or if you're trying to remove them. They'll move around really fast, and they'll try to hide.
Interesting.
And that's like one of the incorporeal beings, and they could take different forms and act like spirit guides and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just like,
there's a lot to watch out for. You mentioned the Archons earlier, and this has become kind of a fascination of mine because the Gnostics mention them, and John Lash talks about the Archons a lot,
yes.
that they're a mind parasite that has been here for thousands of years, well, millions of years, and that they
Before
are
the
really...
Earth, apparently.
Yeah, exactly, and they cannot create of their own, and so all they can do is imitate, and
right.
they have the ability to enter the mind, and they can also be quite large. Have you heard much about the Archons and how they operate?
Well, I've definitely read a lot of John Lash's work in the Nag Hammadi, and I try to observe what I'm seeing in the alien abduction genre and, like, paranormal interference and possession cases. So just to see, you know, how it acts and interacts, especially in the psychopath. I mean, it's so prevalent in the psychopath host, and you could see that, how it operates. And they do copy. It's like they don't, some of these personalities, it's like they're taken over, and they don't know how, I don't know, it's like they don't have imagination. They're always, like, copying somebody else and trying to take someone else's ideas. And they're really, they always, like, fake you out, and then they'll try to, like, copy emotions to
yes.
pretend like they're human.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Oh, my God. Really bad. But I just think it's like what the shamans have observed also in some of these other cultures, where it's a type of mind parasite that it's in all of us, actually. It's like a, I think it's in all of us, and it's up to us to still our minds and let go of limiting false beliefs so that our true nature can shine, and then that parasite can no longer have anything to hold on to, and we'll have to flee. So in essence, I think a lot of the Buddhist meditation and spiritual practices are really aimed at getting rid of the illusions that the mind parasites do in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's not easy. It's there's one article that I have out that's really, I think it's good. It's called Oris Ra as the Archontic Transdimensional Alien Parasite. And it's an interview that I did with a female Milab from Scandinavia, and who was a very lucid woman who remembered a lot of her experiences consciously with alien beings and military. But in her case, she had a lot of dealings with the Draco, and also this Oris Ra type of entity, which Malanga has described in his work. He just called it that because there was a particular entity that kept showing up repeatedly that was higher on the hierarchy, and it takes a chicken-like body or a hawk-like chicken-like body with a almost like a gray face with the gray eyes, but with this weird third eye thing. And I've got a picture on my website, but it's higher on the hierarchy, and it's one of the incorporeal alien parasites. That's one of the more powerful ones.
Uh-huh.
And so this particular type of alien parasite, or you can call it an Archon because it kind of displayed those characteristics, was what this female Milab experienced with, that the Milab controllers who were involved with the occult ritual and the black magic stuff, along with the reptilians and the Dracos, were actually trying to keep this parasite and put this parasite within her. like a possession kind of thing.
Huh.
And when she felt this energy, she went on to describe this in detail in my article about what it feels like and what this energy is. And a lot of the energy, it's very alluring, and it's very intelligent, it's very deceptive, and it makes you want to be proud. It can give you a lot of psychic abilities. But it has this arrogant kind of controlling signature, but it's extremely intelligent, and it would totally amplify your psychic abilities when you have this, quote, implant in you, this parasite. And so this whole article and interview series was about how she rid herself from this parasite through this liberation technique that Malanga created called Sinbad, and her understanding before and after this experience. And the Draco in particular was, I think, describes a lot of what maybe they think the Archons are. Because the Draco seemed to be higher on the hierarchy in terms of control. But the Orus Ra entity for sure would fit that definition, I think, in terms of its effect and behavior and its signature, how it feels. But in her case, she said that most people are not aware of this force, this Orus Ra, whatever you want to call it, because it's subtle. But in her situation, what she believed is that unless you have the courage to face the terror and the fear of facing not only a Draco but a reptilian, when you could face that, then you see the incorporeal alien entities behind them. And that's the archontic factor. And so that's what I think she was dealing directly with. So that's why I felt this article and this series was so important, because you know, she's one of these few really lucid people who was aware enough to be able to perceive all these different levels of interference and be able to identify what that was. In fact, she was so good at what she did. I mean, she was so psychic. I mean, that's why the military used her. They used her to train and assess the psychic accuracy of all these other MILABs under her under her observation while she was in these programs, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And, of course, she got attacked psychically for it, and, you know, we went on to talk about, okay, so after this happened, what did you notice? And so she not only freed herself through several sessions and in her own meditation and within her own lucid dreams, working with archetypes and symbols, being able to recognize it, but she worked with her family. But then she also noticed, you know, these agents being sent her way and the manipulations through other people, you know, through her bank account, through the employer, through the hospital, doctors, through whatever, that they would just try to keep coming in at her to basically punish her or keep her from, you know, being aware. But that's what we see, you know, and so that's what we see in the love bite, too. It's like they'll move in on you once you become aware, and then you start noticing this is where how the war is being played at all these different levels.
Well, it does seem that there are predators on predators, and there's certainly a lot to be aware of.
Yes, but not in a fearful way. I mean, I think once you connect with your own divine nature, and you know what that is, like connecting with your heart and healing those wounds and finding the support to do so, helps take away the fear and the powerlessness that one could feel if you don't understand what's happening. So certainly being aware helps, and reconnecting with your own true power and knowing that you really have it. Because I think we're trained to think we don't have that, or that we have to work really, really hard at it, or have to suffer and, you know, be in poverty and be a friggin', I don't know, all these dumb religions want to make you feel like you have to suffer and be in poverty and have all this penance and be a martyr and whatever, you know, to gain your divine sovereignty. You know what I mean? Have to go through millions of lives of bad karma and whatever. You know?
Yeah, right. It's not for me.
Yeah, I've had enough personally.
It would be nice to be able to know that the divine feminine would be able to manifest again, that the feminine spirit could rise up, because
absolutely,
it's been so suppressed and so
trampled. Yeah, I mean, that is the key, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, bingo,
yeah.
You know, I mean, in terms of what is that essence that has the intuition and the wisdom and the awareness to be able to deal with this, and it is I think it's divine feminine.
Oh, yes,
but
absolutely.
But I think it's also connecting, you know, some people say it's connecting with the planet because the planet is our living mother that gives us life, and to connect with that so that we connect with ourselves as humans and who we really are. Mm-hmm. And we've been disconnected from even knowing that that's a living being. In all these other religions, it's like some god far away off in the sky, and you can't ever get to him, and, you know, you have to be miserable for lifetimes and, you know, be a martyr or whatever.
Yeah, so, right.
There must be a way to connect with it that's a lot more realistic and a lot more down to earth, so to speak.
Literally.
Literally, yeah.
And commune with the nature spirits and the devas and the fairies and the elementals.
Or just learning how to reconnect with the living world, and
right, and we're
part,
so
a greater part of what is living. And I think we get disconnected in our modern societies with computers and, you know, technology, and it's hard to reconnect with nature if you have a real stressful life. Sometimes it's people are so used to being ungrounded and disconnected, and that's why they're powerless and sick a lot. You know?
Yep. Well, we're almost out of time, so I thought if you want to share any final thoughts with us, and make sure that you mentioned your website so people can find your articles and the people that you've mentioned during the show, because there's some terrific stuff on your website.
There's a lot of articles. Yeah, my website is evelorgan.com, and I have a lot of so many information in there, it's just mind-boggling, many different categories of articles and blog posts. And I have a new one coming up that's going to be a real good one on an expose of a of a spiritual community being targeted by demons posing as ET walk-ins. So that one's coming up.
Oh,
and
great.
That one will be really good because it'll show you the dynamics of how they operate and how smooth they are and how to recognize that so that your spiritual community doesn't have to be at risk. Because that's who they target. They target the spiritual people, the people who are waking up. And
wonderful.
Anyway,
well, I can't wait to read that
one. It'll be a good one. I'm just waiting on a couple more things, and I think that will be very timely.
Wonderful. Well, Eve, thank you so much for coming on again tonight, and I wish you the best, and we'll be talking again probably sometime in the near future.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.